Hey guys, Alex Newman here, and I'm here with Dr. Juliet Engel. She's one of the speakers here at the Red Pill Expo, and she wrote a book about her horrifying experience having been involved in the CIA's really wacky operations, I mean, evil operations, including Operation Paperclip and MK Ultra. The title of your book was Sparky, Surviving Sex Magic. So, Dr. Engel, tell us a little bit about your childhood. I mean, how did you get sucked into this world?
Well, my uncle and my great uncles were all OSS, German-speaking American operatives at the Nuremberg trials. So they were instrumental in bringing over probably hundreds of Nazi scientists who'd done experimentation on concentration camp victims for about 20 years, including the mind control experiments and the first experiments in transhumanism and creating what they called cyborgs. And so when I was 6 years old, my father took me to the park to meet an associate of his, and basically he drugged me with a bottle of Coca-Cola, and basically the associate of my father then raped me in front of him, and I made me watch him take the money. And so that was the beginning of my indoctrination into the MK Ultra program, and it went on from there. Various annexes, different places that everywhere we lived, we moved often because the schools would pick up on something very wrong in our family, and then we would move to a new place, and it would all start again. So it was described to me as the secret butterfly program. So we were given little pins that looked like birds, but told that they were actually butterflies. And there you go with the programming, because the initiation into every programming session, they would tie me to a wheel, would spin the wheel faster and faster and faster while people around it chanted, "There is no good, there is no bad, there is no light, there is no dark, there is no day, there is no night." And it would go on and on and on. "There is no black, there is no white, there is only," when you're just spitting and ready to throw up, they say, "There's only green." And green is the obliteration, destruction of all consciousness and of all humanity. And at that point, you're supposed to be no longer human.
It's just, as a father, it's hard for me to comprehend how a father could allow something like that to happen, or even participate in something like that happening to his child. What's the story with that? Was he a monster? I mean, and by the way, folks, OSS is the Office of Strategic Services. That was the precursor to the CIA. But I mean, what was the deal with your dad?
I really don't know. But from he was obviously involved with the CIA. He was stationed at various places along the southern border, so I spent a lot of time very close to Mexico, like as close as you could get to Mexico. They were paid. They made me watch while the associate who had molested me paid my father. And when I was begging him for help, he said, "This is what I raised you for." So it created, I couldn't trust my father. So I had nowhere in my life that I could trust. And if it wasn't for well-meaning teachers and school districts and social workers in schools, I don't know what would have happened to me. And I also had a grandmother who was a Christian, and my parents were atheists, and the whole program was satanic and involved blatant Satan worship, black masses, Saturnalias, which I describe in my book, Sparky. And I forgot where I was going.
Well, what was the purpose of these experiments? What was the purpose of these programs? Was this just evil for the sake of evil? Were they researching, trying to accomplish something? They wanted to control your mind, or what was the deal?
Well, the MK and MK Ultra stands for Mein Kampf, which is Hitler's book, his manifesto for National Socialism, and stands for my struggle. And if you read the last 300 pages of this 1,000-page ponderous tome, he describes his plan for the Third Reich, basically, for the future of the New World Order. And in that, he describes a race of slaves who come through the psychological conditioning and become operatives all over the world for the controllers, basically, for the National Socialists.
And so were you supposed to become one of these operatives then?
Yes. So they recruited the children of high-level government people, people in industry, people from the intelligence communities, because they had the best chance, I think, of becoming then academics and infiltrating State Department, high-level government agencies. And they did that. They really did that. So Hollywood was involved. A lot of my conditioning and training went on at Disneyland, where they would take us there. I was sent out in the crowd, told to pick up a man. I was like 8 years old at the time, and you know, get him to molest me in one of the rides at Disneyland, where I knew there was a camera, and they'd be taking pictures. So that was all part of the becoming a seductress. Are learning those skills. And so the programs took place in Seattle, all over different places in California, Chicago, and quite a bit of my time was spent down on the border of Mexico.
And what's the nexus with transhumanism? I mean, you're saying these people wanted to transcend the human, kind of like Adolf Hitler talking about the superhumans that he wanted to create. So what was the objective there?
Well, you take your core of future leaders and you punish them, you abuse them, you terrify them, you sexually abuse them to the point where they just can't stand it anymore. And then you give them the option. Either they ride what's called the freedom train, which is you die, or you give up your soul. And a fair number, of course, died. You've seen the 27 Club and the number of people that, young musicians and talented individuals that seem to commit suicide for no reason. That's one way out. The other way out is to surrender your soul. And once you've surrendered your soul, you get all the bling, all the rewards, all the accolades. Every door is open to you. You're placed in positions of power, even though you may be a very mediocre candidate. You know, you wonder how these awful singers get to be singing in the Super Bowl when there's so many more talented people. Well, it's because they're part of this world, and their belief is that they will become the supermen. And that they become the transhumans. So they are in the process of becoming, when I was young, they called it cyborgs. So it's when humans could unite with machines and get parts that were artificially made. And
that's happening right now. I mean, we have people who are right now becoming cyborgs. They're speaking at the World Government Summit. It's pretty amazing. Did you ever report any of this to law enforcement? I mean, was there ever police investigations? Did any of these people ever get brought to justice?
I was involved in multiple police investigations because I was involved in a lot of child abuse accusations. And I would tell everybody, and nobody listened. Absolutely nobody listened. And then I'd be severely punished for speaking out. I ran away once to a church and tried to tell a whole church full of people what was going on. And they just looked at me like I was trying to explain that I was in a program that was sponsored by the NSA. And those people had never even heard of the NSA. And up until 2 years ago, I think that's pretty much true of the general public. So it's like, how could they understand? But I was desperate to tell somebody. I would tell my teachers. They would send me to the social workers. The social workers would visit my house. And then within a week, we would move to another place. So I went to new schools a couple times a year, and it was constant change. And I would be in school half the time. The other half the time, I would be in a program and undergoing whatever they were doing. And a lot of it, I don't remember, because a lot of it involved drugs. But eventually, I would be brought home, and I suffered from severe anemia, although no one could figure out why. So they were taking my blood, and I would go back to, I would erase everything that was so traumatic, and that's how they created multiple identities in their victims. I certainly still have that problem. And
so you have multiple identities now, or you still struggle with that?
I struggle with the fact that I kind of drift from one to the other. I don't notice it, but other people do. And it's also a handy tool when you're working in another country. But
And you managed to get out of this. You told me you ran away when you were 17, and then you became a medical doctor. How did that happen? How did you run away? I mean, they didn't come chase after you. And how are you free to talk to me right now? I mean, aren't the people who were involved in these programs, aren't they concerned that you're writing books and speaking out about it?
Oh, I'm sure they are. When I was in high school, when I was 17, I knew that I was coming to that point where either I gave up my soul and became a trio of other transhuman candidates, or I died. I went off on the freedom train. And those were the two options that I was approaching. So I secretly applied to the University of Washington a year early and got my teachers to help me forge my parents' signatures on everything. No, they didn't know anything about it. And got myself accepted at the University of Washington. And that summer, I was up at what's called Murphy Hot Springs. It's not called Esalen. It's some upscale New Age thing up in up near Monterey. But at that time, it was just an old bar and a hot springs, and it's where they brought record execs to like get them high on LSD and give them all the pretty girl party favors, and I don't know what they were doing, but I was there. I was like a party favor, and I had a tambourine and hair down to my thighs, and did a lot of jumping around. But I was waiting. I was waiting for an opportunity to get away, and it did happen. My controller, who was regularly going into town and selling blotters of LSD, drove in his sports car and crashed into the swimming pool, not swimming pool, it was a fountain, and left the engine running. And I got in the car with him in it, pushed him over the side, and got out and drove all the way up to Grants Pass, Oregon. And I had to get him out of the car at some point, which I did, and found that the car was full of drug money because he'd been selling blotters of LSD and green stamps. I don't know if that...
Is that a drug or...
Green stamps?
Yeah.
No, green stamps. You used to get, when you bought gas in California, they'd give you green stamps. It's like a little incentive.
Oh, okay.
But you got enough books of green stamps, you could get great stuff, clothes and luggage and hair dryers, and that's what I did. I found the car was completely full of green stamps, and I got a bus ticket to Seattle. I went to Seattle, showed up, matriculated myself, bought everything I need with green stamps, and forgot. So from that point forward, I had no memory of anything before that. So I was like a new person, completely new person. So I sort of took on the persona of the people around me and dressed like they dressed and acted like they acted and went to school. And I'm smart enough that I worked my way through school and got accepted into medical school. Went to medical school, graduated in the top of my class, and practiced, got a degree in radiology and practiced radiology for 20 years in Seattle before I went to Russia to work on maternal and infant health reform.
And one of the things you did in Russia and in the former Soviet Union was rescue children who were being trafficked. You were involved, was it Operation Angel? Can you tell us about that? I mean, you just massive numbers of children getting sucked into the underworld. And tell us about that and what you were involved with trying to rescue those kids.
Sure. I originally got to Russia. I was invited. I'm a radiologist and a specialist in prenatal ultrasound, and I was invited to go on their first citizens diplomacy exchange. So I was the first American doctor into their maternity hospital system, which was horrifying, absolutely horrifying. And I couldn't walk away from that. So I got more and more involved with helping them reform their childbirth practices, putting new laws in place, cleaning up the hospitals, doing exposés, media exposés in the hospitals, getting the whole country involved, getting the fathers involved. And it was in that process of doing all that I discovered that about a third of the kids were being given away at birth to orphanages. And so over the next year or so, I got out into those orphanages and discovered how appalling the situation was for those kids. And at that time in Russia, there were, this is just in Russia, not the whole USSR, there were 800,000 children in orphanages growing up in institutions. And at graduation or from puberty on, they would just start disappearing. And digging a little deeper, I discovered that buses were coming from Finland and picking up busloads of kids, of girls, and driving them north to Finland. And then they never came back. And the other kids thought it was great, you know, it was like they were waiting for their turn to get on this bus and go to Finland. And I followed the bus up through Finland, and I had contacts in Murmansk and the Kola Peninsula, and they said, you know, these buses go to Norway. They go all the way through Finland and up through the lawless central part of Sweden and up into Norway. So I took a bus from Murmansk in northern Russia, 4 hours to Kirkenes, Norway, and went to the police there. And they said, oh, yeah, these buses of girls are always coming, and they go from place to place, and men get on the bus, and Swedish tourists, they always blame everything on Sweden, would get on the bus and have sex with the girls. And eventually the girls...
So the police knew this?
The police knew this. And the girls would eventually die, and they would find them, and they would bury them. They buried them all. And the policeman had a drawer full of pictures of girls' faces. And I told them there were 13 girls I was tracing from this orphanage, and I was looking for them. I had their names, I had all their information, their passports and dates, everything. So he showed me this drawer full of pictures and said, see if you can find your girls. And that was, I just about vomited in his wastebasket because, I mean, all these dead children in his drawer. And
those pictures of dead children?
Yes, their faces. And of course, you can't recognize anyone, and I was in too much shock to even try. And he said they called them all Natasha, and they buried them in a common grave. And he said if they find any of them alive, they do help them. Maybe. And so I really had to recover for a night, but I did come back the next day, and by the next day, it was a different police officer, and he denied they had any pictures. So I was just kicking myself that I hadn't taken the pictures or done something more, you know, to get that information. But I don't know that it would have helped. And so from that point on, I started working. I went on the assumption that children are being trafficked from orphanages and small villages. So I went from place to place to place in Russia with a team and told the local people about trafficking, about the risks. And when I described these things, and the local villagers would just come unglued because they'd realize what had happened to a lot of their children, a lot of their kids. And over the next 2 years, we came up with a plan to create little coalitions in all local villages. Because we had no money, a lot of those villages didn't even have a telephone in the whole village. They had to go to another village to even make a phone call. And they were just so helpless. And so I thought, well, if you all band together, you won't be helpless. And everybody knew, everybody was more afraid of the police than they were of the traffickers. They knew who the traffickers were. They were all people they knew. And but everyone had their own personal trusted network. And in oppressive societies, I think that's how people survive. You have your own little, they call it a krugozori, of people that you can count on for the things that you need. And so we took advantage of taking people's krugozoris and uniting them with the next village and the next village and the next village. And eventually we had 150 different villages, cities, and towns that were contributing police help, educational help, food help, grocery help, shelter help, and this organic network, the Angel Coalition, started operating on no budget. I mean, nobody had any money, but it was just the determination and goodwill and the incredible strength of the Russian people when they cottoned on to the idea of what was happening.
So how many children would you say you guys managed to rescue from the traffickers and what was going on?
Well, eventually we were rescuing Russian women and children from all over North Africa, from Eastern Europe, from Western Europe, some from the United States, and then all the former Soviet countries. And it came out to close to 70,000 over the course of the 12 years that the Angel Coalition was really active. And then eventually we got too active and were too successful, and that's when my protege, my assistant, was killed as a message. And the Angel Coalition still operates, but it's not as visible, and people are doing things locally. And the Russians took over much more of the funding and the operation of it. So it's a big, messy story. It's a big, messy problem. Trafficking is a big, messy problem. I know people in this country are just starting to really confront how big of a problem it is. And it's not any different here than in the Russian villages. The people here in their towns know who the traffickers are, and they know where it's happening, really. They're kind of not believing that this is possible. And I've heard this several times at this conference. They're going, oh, no, it just can't be happening there. But then they realize that it is. And people have to wake up to the threat and get active. But the same thing can be done here. You know, the Angel Coalition can operate here.
So how do you get a hold of your book? What's the best way to get a copy?
You can go on my website, which is julietteengel.com.
Can you spell that for us?
J-U-L-I-E-T-T-E, Engel, E-N-G-E-L.com. And you'll see the books and then how to order it.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Juliet, for sharing your story. Is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you think the folks should know?
I think that trafficking is a major issue all over the world, and that a lot of the real evil that's going on is being fueled by human trafficking. And beyond human trafficking, I mean the sacrifice of children. You know, what's happening to these thousands of children that are coming over the border and disappearing? I'd say that I've tried to trace some of them down. I know other people, they just disappear, and they're disappearing on government planes. So it's our government that is trafficking these children, and I want to know what's happening to them. And I have a very, from my own experience, I know that at the Saturnalias, they were sacrifices of children, and the children were foreign children. So, those children aren't safe. They shouldn't be here. They should be sent home, and our government is complicit in a lot of awful things.
Well, before we let you go, any ideas on what people can do?
Start researching in your own communities. The secret to the Angel Coalition and why it worked is that each people understood their own little network. If someone in Michigan is trying to understand what's happening in Washington, D.C., it's not going to happen. But if you're trying to understand what's happening in your local strip mall, you'll probably figure it out. And when enough small towns in a state start linking up and sharing information, they're going to find commonalities, like the same people coming through, the same cars coming through, and form alliances with law enforcement. Most of law enforcement is indifferent. Some of it's corrupt, but you'll always find good guys, and use your good guys. And it was a quick preview of a huge, of many years and a huge lot of activity. But I think everything that I learned in Russia can be used here.
Well, Dr. Engel, we are so thankful for you sharing your insight and the information. Folks, go check out the book. Thank you very much. This is Dr. Juliet Engel. I'm Alex Newman for The New American. Thanks for watching. And until next time, God bless.